Why, indeed, it is a Thursday. Time to talk to the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Haney, brought to you as always by Anderson Insurance Agency. And we have a lot of exciting things to talk about. And we start with the men's basketball team knocking off Duke on Tuesday night in Indianapolis. Brian, how you doing, my man? And how about that finish by the Jayhawks when they were down five and ended up winning by five?
Yeah, incredible. 15-5 run there. Grady Dick with seven consecutive points for us. And total team effort down the stretch, man. You saw K.J. Adams step up and make some big plays. Jalen Wilson also was huge. Both those guys had career highs, by the way, K.J. and Jalen. And DeJuan Harris, career high 10 assists. So it was awesome to see the way it all came together, and that was on the heels of a five-minute scoring drought. So just when you thought that they were dead to rights, they flipped the switch, and it really started with the freshman coming alive. It's not that Grady had struggled. He just had kind of disappeared and blended into the background, and it was time for him to step to the forefront and, you know, be more of an alpha dog there down the stretch. And so he gets the ball on three straight possessions and in three different ways comes up with really key hoops. So that was certainly exciting to see what he's capable of on that stage, and makes you think that what we saw in those first couple of games, you know, against lesser competition is something that over the course of the season he can replicate, because you wondered what would it look like when he goes up against real length and real athletes. And here he did it with several acrobatic driving finishes, three of them in fact, in the game versus Duke. Hits the big three, gets a rim finish with a dunk. So he's definitely showing out that he's worth every bit of the preseason hype and anticipation that he got. And now, as if they weren't already popular, the T-shirt sales for Grady Dick. I told you, I think, last week that he was the number two NIL athlete in the last year behind Ochai Agbaji, and it was only game two of the season at that point. Now they're making new shirts, as you can imagine, with all kinds of phrases, and he's just becoming this megastar. So good for him. Hopefully he'll keep it coming, but we're really excited about the way he's opened his career.
I got to share a story with you. He played at Wichita Collegiate, and our team, Beloit, as I was covering them, we were going to play Wichita Collegiate in the state semifinals. I saw him play against Colby in the first round. He played okay, nothing super spectacular, but you could see, obviously, the potential that he had. And there were many rumors that he was going to go to Sunrise after that season. And so our team was really looking forward to the challenge of playing against him in the state semifinals. And, of course, COVID hit. And we never had that opportunity to play against Grady Dick. I don't know if Grady Dick would have scored 30 or 40 against us and we would have lost. I don't know if he would have scored 12 and we would have shut him down and won. We'll never know, unfortunately. But I remember seeing him up in person in high school, and I thought, hey, he's going to be a really good player. And there was, you know, I think even at the time we knew he was going to KU, or that was the plan. He was going to go to KU. And then, of course, he goes to Sunrise and he starts playing the national high school circuit and he's on national television. And he has absolutely picture perfect form shot when he goes up. And it helps that you're 6'6 as well. But it is kind of interesting to see, after watching him, I think he was a sophomore maybe that year, maybe junior or sophomore. I think a sophomore there at Wichita Collegiate, to see how much he has grown.
Yeah, he's grown in his game, and he's grown physically. He's now up to 6'8. And I know we talked about
he's 6'8? I thought he was 6'6. Holy cow, he's 6'8 now. He doesn't stop growing.
And when you shoot above your head like he does, and you're that tall, it's almost unguardable. Brandon Rush and Mario Chalmers had made that observation at a preseason practice, and Bill Self was quoting them at Big 12 Media Day, and everybody grabbed hold of that quote. Brandon was actually with us in the pregame the other day, because he lives in Carmel, Indiana, and he came on the pregame, and I was asking him about that observation, and he said, yeah, you know, it's just his release point, his quick release, and then the fact that he's so stinking tall. Unless you're right there on the ball and you're Filipowski, a 7-footer or whatever, and you anticipate it, you're really not going to be able to block it. You might alter it, but he just gets it off so quick, so high, so well. And so it's a really impressive, you know, total package to marvel at when you look at the height, the release, all of that. And then the confidence to go with it. I mean, he's so confident that If he misses three in a row, he's going to shoot three more. And that's, you know, the type of mentality you have as a great shooter.
Yep, shooters have to shoot, no doubt. Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you as always every Thursday by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky at 118 North Mill in Beloit, or call them at 738 738- 57-01. One of the things that stood out to me watching this game, certainly KU could have had a much bigger lead at halftime, had some turnovers, maybe a few careless ones. That didn't really bother me. The defense was doing a great job. They took like five or six charges in the first half, which was insane. But what stood out to me, Brian, was in crunch time, when KU was down five with about 3.5 to go, and that's when Grady Dick got hot, came off the bench, made those shots that we referred to. But KJ Adams had a big finish. Of course, Jalen Wilson was huge. But what stood out to me was Duke had one kid with experience in those situations. That was Jeremy Roach. KU had, even though they're young in various spots, they had Kevin McCuller, they had Jalen Wilson, and they had DeJuan Harris. And I thought, honestly, that made the difference in the final minutes. Would you agree?
Yeah. We hoped that would be kind of what separated them heading in, and sure enough, you saw that poise down the stretch. And even though Kevin wasn't on the title team, he played Duke in the Sweet 16 a year ago. He's actually been on teams that played Duke twice in his Tech career. So he's a guy that, though he's going to play on bigger stages perhaps at Kansas more frequently than what he did at Tech, he's played in some huge games. And so that definitely helped. And, you know, a guy that's been in the college ranks for four-plus years, you know, you want that type of experience and savvy. And it really showed. And DeJuan just affects the game in so many ways, as we always say, you know, whether it shows up on the stat sheet or not, he can dominate a game with his presence on both ends. And you saw that. I mean, how about the tremendous block and transition he had? He's a marvel to watch. And he actually had an exchange with Holly Rowe after the game that I won't say went viral, but it was super popular amongst Kansas fans because it's a couple of moments where you saw him holding his ankle and his foot, and yet he was able to press through it. She's like, "What was the key?" And he says, "Ah, Ched gave me some pills." And Ched is short for Cheddar, which is the nickname for Bill Cowgill. I really don't know how he got the name Cheddar, but everybody calls him Cheddar. But the internet thought that he said Chad gave me some pills, and they made all these memes about some dude named Chad giving him pills. But Cheddar, for anybody that knows him by that name, which is a lot of people, he got like 100 text messages while we were sitting on the runway waiting to fly home because everybody was talking about him as the pill guy. But my point in bringing that up is Juan's just this really unassuming kid that you know, he's still kind of stepping into the spotlight, and he's a really good interview now. He used to be a little shyer when he was younger, but he's still not in that, you know, spotlight superstar status yet, and yet if he keeps playing the way he has, you know, he's going to be a guy that's as much in demand as anybody. And but it's fun to see the innocence that he's still super young, and Ched's giving him pills, man. It was hilarious, and yet I know Bill Self. If you asked him, you know, who are your top two favorite players, you know, you've coached in your 20 years, if he wasn't able to pick Tyler Self, he'd say Marcus Garrett and DeJuan Harris. Mm-hmm. Those would be the top two, and we've seen him in the last couple of years here. But they just both embody all of the character traits that Bill Self loves the most. And on top of that, Juan has overcome a lot in his life to be here and be thriving. So we're really proud of him, and that was a ton of fun to see.
KU, the other thing, too, I want to touch upon before we look ahead and get a look at football, too, is that the depth of this team. I mean, MJ Rice didn't make the trip. He was ill. Zach Clements out with an injury. I mean, that's two guys that definitely would have played in that game on Tuesday, and you had other guys step up. I mean, this team definitely has depth.
They do. You know, we also lost Kyle Cuff
in
the last week, and he'll be out for 10 to 12 weeks with a knee injury, which is unfortunate. I don't think that he was going to be anywhere near the top nine rotation, but that was a guy that many had said internally was competing for our best athlete on the team. Joe Yesufu, Kyle Cuff, probably athletically our two most gifted guys. So that was unfortunate. He's a great kid, too. He's one of those guys that reclassified and then redshirted last year, and he's trying to carve out a role, and then he goes down with an injury. The other injuries you referenced are much more short-term. In the case of MJ, it was just an illness. You know, hopefully he's back on Friday. But, it's definitely impressive when you see him go up there with nine scholarship players and really only two true big men, because they like to play KJ, you know, as a more of a wing, you know, defense guy. He's been starting and playing down low out of need, but when you think of like true five men on this team, it's just Zuby and obviously Ernest right now, because Cam Martin's been out with the shoulder, and now Zach Clement's out recently, and I think both those freshmen would play ahead of those two veterans anyway. But the point is, you didn't have anything behind him, which made KJ's minutes even more important. And as I referenced, he had a career high 8 points, and it made Zuby's impact, the 5 rebounds he had and the time he got, really impressive. So he actually outshined Ernest the other night, I thought, and a lot of that had to do with his presence on the glass in a game where Duke's length for stretches was really giving us fits, and he found a way to step up and, you know, hold them to some one and out offensive possessions because of good interior defensive blockout positioning. And that's what you needed for a Kansas club that, you know, for a while there was looking like the shorter, less athletic team. Zuby came in and put his nose in there and made some big time defensive rebounds, which is exactly what this club needed him to do.
Absolutely. All right, so we got Southern Utah coming up on Friday there in Lawrence, 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock on our sister station, Z96.3 Lake. And then you get to go to the Bahamas. I've tried to go to the Bahamas twice, me and my wife. We're 0-2. Hurricane wiped us out first time. It moved us to Jamaica. And then the second time, COVID stopped us from going to the Bahamas. So hopefully things go a little smoother for you guys when you go. NC State coming up next Wednesday, then Thursday either Dayton or Wisconsin, and then hopefully in the championship game on Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. Since we probably won't have you on next week, and you'll be traveling and doing all that stuff, and it's Thanksgiving, a short week, can you kind of give us a synopsis of the field there and the battle for Atlantis and the Bahamas and how KU fares against those teams?
Yeah, I think that, honestly, our side of the bracket, the one that worries you is Dayton, because they're 21st in the country, and they would be a potential semifinal game. Obviously, they beat Kansas in the semis a year ago in Orlando, which some of the people I talk to, that makes them worry about Dayton less, because Kansas himself will have an axe to grind, and suddenly it's like, well, you know, they're not going to beat us 2 years in a row. They're pretty good, though. They did just lose on Tuesday night to UNLV, an unranked team, so they may be unranked by the time we face them, but they opened the season and spent the first 2 weeks as a top 25 team. Beyond that, I mean, Wisconsin's picked in the back half of the preseason Big Ten. NC State, who we open with, is picked in the back half of the ACC. You know, in getting out of those first couple of rounds, and then who knows what waits for you on the other side of the championship, but it's pretty favorable, I think, for Kansas. So if they make it through the first couple of rounds, they'll be playing on Friday night at 7:30, and then I actually have to fly back and miss that game because we got to get back for football with KU, K-State. But the big hurdle to clear would be the second day if it's Dayton. Like I said, with recent revenge on the mind, and you know, you think back to some of these early season tournaments, they had an epic game with Dayton in Maui back in 2019. Yeah. And so for whatever reason, we keep getting matched up with them at these various tournaments. And so score to settle from last year, but we got them in 19 too. So it's going to be fun to see if indeed that is the matchup in round two.
Yeah, because the other side, you'd have what, BYU and Butler, USC and Tennessee. Is there a team on the other side that would concern you?
You know, I haven't had a chance to dive into Tennessee as much, but that's another team that's in recent years we've matched up with in some of these early season events. And obviously, Butler has good tradition. BYU's about to join the league, and they've been good. But I haven't filled out any boards on them yet because, again, it's kind of it's almost, you know, a fool's errand to do it because three of those four we won't see.
Right.
But yeah, it's I would say this, and I don't want to like. Gosh, I don't want to sound like we're over confident or anything, because we could absolutely lose in one of the first two games. But it's not as loaded of a field as when you go to Maui and there's like four ranked teams, and you feel like, oh my gosh, this is going to be a meat grinder. But as we found out last year in Orlando, you know, this time of year, anybody can beat anybody because you're all working out kinks, you're all still, you know, establishing roles with new players, and so. It's not the loaded field necessarily that a Maui Invitational would have, but I remember being, you know, was it last year, I guess, in Orlando, and we thought, man, the golden matchup, if we get there, is going to be Kansas versus Alabama. You know, it was number 9 in the country. And we both got beat in the first couple of games. And so the point is, as much as we can look at it and say, yeah, you know, this is one we should win, man, anything can happen when it's week 3 of the season. So it should be a competitive field down there. And obviously, you know, Kansas at times, one year in particular, struggled down there. And so I think it'll be interesting to see what it all comes together. I've never done a game at Atlantis. I've done a couple of Bahamas Bowls, but it's my understanding they play this in a ballroom in the Atlantis, you know, facility there. Atlantis is the name of the big resort. And so, yeah, that'll be interesting, too, just the setting for the game. But I'm looking forward to it. There won't be a ton of time for snorkeling or sunbathing or anything like that. It's a business trip, and we're getting ready for football as well. But definitely it'll be nice to get away from 25 degrees here in Kansas when we head down there next week.
Yeah, you'll be bouncing all over the place, no doubt. And then football, Texas comes to town. Of course, we know what KU did to Texas in Austin last year with that big win. You know Texas will be ready to go for this one. Texas still has an outside chance of making it to the Big 12 title game. And K-State fans are going to be cheering for KU because if KU would knock off Texas and K-State would win at West Virginia, K-State would lock up a spot in the Big 12 championship game. And it is interesting to end the season. You got Texas at home, and that's going to be a lot of fun, I think. And that's a 2:30 pregame at 2 o'clock on Z96.3 Lake. And then, of course, the Sunflower Showdown will be under the lights, which I think is very exciting. It'll be 7 o'clock next Saturday night in Manhattan between the Jayhawks and the Wildcats. And KU could actually play the role. They could actually ruin everything for K-State possibly in that final game. But just about the Texas matchup, who do you think is going to be a quarterback? I mean, Bean's banged up, and Daniels, maybe he's close to coming back. What have you been hearing in regards to the quarterback position?
Well, Coach Leipold said last night that all three guys, including Ethan Vasco, have been getting snaps. Jason's coming late in the week. Not that he wasn't doing anything at the start of the week, but he did more yesterday than he'd done either of the previous 2 days. This has kind of been a week, I think for 3 weeks now, that they've circled and they were hopeful that maybe this is the week Jalen comes back. Coach said it's going to be a true game time decision, but obviously he's done more this week in terms of reps and first team reps than he's had. But I think the fact that it's still an unknown situation on taking that first hit, and he's not a true pocket passer that just needs good protection and he's going to get the ball out quick and he's fine. When Jalen Daniels is at his best, he's running that option. He's you know, scrambling on a broken play and making something happen. And you want to make sure the shoulder stability is such that the first time he gets popped, you know, he's not compromised in any way. And so I think there's a good chance you could see him. But at the same time, you know, coach is keeping it pretty close to the vest because he's still, let's be real, he's still operating ahead of schedule in recovery here. So, you know, even though it's been a month and a half now, I think that, you know, for a lot of other people, they wouldn't be back this quick doing what he's been doing for the last 3 weeks. And so I think that there's a good chance he's in the mix. I know that, you know, when you've had Jason by and large play well, I know he had disappointing turnovers last week and some frustrating plays, but by and large, he's filled in really well. Sometimes it's tough to pull the plug on a guy like that, but because last week didn't go the way it could have, and we had some self-inflicted wounds that he was responsible for, it's a little easier to slide some roles back to Jalen. But I know there was some thought amongst the fan base that maybe when he came back, if Jason Bean was still rolling, do you see a couple of quarterbacks kind of taking turns? Ideally, that's not what they would want to do big picture, but could you see that in the next couple of weeks maybe? I think it's a possibility. So we'll truly have to wait till Saturday and see the game time decision. But I like the way it's trending to have availability of all three, and that makes it even tougher for Texas, and we certainly want that.
No doubt. All right, time for the off-the-wall question for you, Brian. You're going to be traveling certainly quite a bit. You have for years. That's what's part of the gig when you're the play-by-play announcer for a university. If you were barred from the United States of America and you could not live here, Where would you live if it was not in the United States of America? What would be the ideal place to you to move to?
Man, that's a great question. I have always loved Vancouver ever since an early trip to go up there in my career for a Canadian exhibition tour. And I always thought it was one of the most beautiful cities in North America. You have mountains, you have the ocean. It feels a little bit foreign and exotic, even though it's still technically large portions of it English-speaking. But the most beautiful place I've ever been in my life was another exhibition tour with Kansas, and that was going to Italy, specifically Lake Como, Italy. George Clooney has a house there. I know Tom Hanks is your doppelganger, but George Clooney, another very popular one with the ladies, he's got a house there. We were on a boat sailing across the lake of Lake Como toward the Isle of Bellagio, and our boat tour guide said, "The shutters are open on George Clooney's house today. That means he's home right now." And then he's like, "Now over on your right, that's where John Legend and I always forget his wife's name. She's famous too. That's where they got married." And so the point is, it attracts superstars from all over the world. It was the most beautiful little slice of heaven I've ever seen in my life. So if I ever had a chance and had to live outside the country for whatever reason this hypothetical created, I'd probably try to go to Lake Como. But I need to make a lot more money to live there, that's for sure.
Yeah, that sounds like a great place. You described it very, very well. And for the record, Tom Hanks is offended. Tom Cruise is my doppelganger. Everybody knows that. Come on now.
Did I say Tom Hanks?
Yeah, you did, but that's okay. It's okay. I would be happy to be Tom Hanks' doppelganger and get paid a percentage of whatever he gets paid. And then I could maybe afford to buy you a place there in Italy.
Yeah, you probably could. No, I we got back at 4 in the morning the other day, so I'm still catching up. So if I say Hanks instead of Cruz, who knows what's going to come out tomorrow night on the broadcast. We're still playing catch up from our
It is all good. I just don't want to confuse our listening audience. I talk about Tom Cruise is like my dad, you know, because we look so alike. Anyway, hey man, have safe travels to the Bahamas, and we will talk to you again. Happy Thanksgiving, happy holidays. Don't eat too much turkey or mashed potatoes or pie or whatever. We'll talk to you again after the holiday.
They serve different stuff down there. I've spent about 3 Thanksgivings down in the Bahamas, and the Bahamian tradition is a little different. So who knows what we'll eat, but we'll have fun, that's for sure. And we'll talk to you next week, Monash.
You tell me what you like the most after that. When we talk again, you tell me what was the best thing on Thanksgiving in Bahamas. I got to remember that.
You got it, buddy.
All right, man.
Good.
Take care. Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, our guest every Thursday, and he is brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency, Dated Farm, Home, Auto, Life, and Crop Insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky at 118 North Millen Beloit, or call them at 738-5701.